You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. Hello, Stark.
Hey.
How you doing today?
I think I'll live.
It's been a long week for you, so I'm glad that you made it here in one piece to record another episode. We've been getting such great feedback on the show. I have to thank everyone that's been coming by the Twitch channel and telling us how helpful the podcast is. It's always fun when you're there, too, because I can be like, look, there's my co-host. So that's always a good time. Last week, Stark, to recap, we talked to people about battle mechanics and inventory management, some very necessary things when it comes to getting into ESO and actually navigating through the daily life, you know, actually being able to kill something, loot it, and deal with the loot. But then this week... What are we talking about this week, Stark? Why don't you tell the lovely folks?
Guilds and social systems. So this is getting into the idea of actually dealing with other players in the player-run guilds as opposed to simply the guild skill lines, which is what we focused on up to this point.
Right. Guild skill lines being your NPC-style guilds, your Dark Brotherhood and Thieves Guild. You go in there, you learn some skills, get some abilities to kill stuff. This is our friends, our people we hang out with every day in-game. And probably the people I'm like the most thankful for in ESO is everyone that's kind of banded together and joined our guild and such. So let's talk about the basics of it. And you stop me, Stark, if I say anything wrong here, but I'm going to read from our notes that when you are looking at the absolute basics of a guild, they can be a player can join five of them. That's very different than other MMOs.
Yeah, because it's actually account wide. Instead of it being per character. So you have five guilds for your entire account, but you can be in all of them simultaneously rather than having to commit each character to a guild, either the same guild or separately.
Now, if you're coming from WoW, that is radically different. In that game, it is one guild per character, but that means that you have different characters that are not necessarily in the same guild. It means you really are kind of strapped down to one thing with your main character. You can't interact outside of that ecosystem. I personally am a fan of this by and large. I think a lot of people want more slots, but I am very thankful that we even have five slots.
Well, I'd like more slots, but yeah, it's a good system because it moves the pressure off of having a character to what you're doing as a player. It allows you more freedom to interact with the game how you want, people in the game that you want, without having to go, oh, hey, if I want to hang out with my friends over here, I need to be a specific character or I won't be able to see guild chat.
That is a great point. I like what you said there, that it's moving it from the character to the player. That's a really good thing to say. And we're going to talk about this in detail here in a little bit, but there are a lot of different types of guilds. There are guilds that are purely social, some that are based on trading. There are guilds of people you'll meet on the internet. There's all kinds of things, endgame progression style guilds, all that stuff. And that's why people, I think, most of the time seem to be interested in joining all five and wanting many, many more.
Yep.
So.
Also because you get to know people and then it's like, well, I don't want to leave this guild because I know these people in it, but I also need a guild for this stuff over here. So, yeah, there's reasons why you'd want more than five. If you're just starting out, that might sound kind of crazy. How would you juggle that much? But you get there.
Yeah, it's true. So let's see. Guilds have a few uniform systems that are available to their members. And those things would be guild banks, guild tabards, and guild stores. And now if you're someone that's interested in creating your own guild, these things are unlocked incrementally. So your guild bank is... I have my little issues with this system. It is a bank, much like your personal player one. However, it starts off with, I believe, 500 spots in it. As soon as you unlock it, and you don't have to pay anything as a guild to unlock the bank, as soon as you have 10 members in your guild, you get this bank unlocked. Holds 500 slots, and you can choose, as the guild leader, you can choose who has access to deposit money into it, deposit supplies into it, and then who can withdraw those items.
Yep. It's actually also got a little bit of a pain here because you can't stack stuff while it's in the bank. Yeah. So if you've got two different things of the same type that you put in there that normally would stack with each other, you do need to pull them out to stack them and then put them back in. This is a holdover from an exploit way back at launch where you could actually keep cramming stuff into the bank and it would duplicate it. So unfortunately, that's actually there for a very good reason, unfortunately. But wow. Yeah. Other thing is, it doesn't start at 500. It's always at 500. You can't change the size of it later. So you always have access to that. Unfortunately, you can only pick who has access to what's in there based on their rank. You can't actually set withdrawal limit. So if someone has access to permissions to withdraw gold, they can withdraw all of it. The result here is if you're setting up a guild and starting out with your bank, you probably want to configure that so new players don't have direct access to withdrawing from it, but set it up instead so that guild officers, you know, the people you know and trust, can access it. And then if anybody new needs access to it, you can get the stuff for them or have another guild rep get those items.
And I feel like this episode, probably more than any so far, is going to be a lot of opinions from, at least coming from me, of different tips, tricks. And I'm also soliciting advice from listeners. You guys, if you have a better mechanism to manage any of this, if you have a really good insight on something, please, by all means, share it with us. Because I'm always looking for new ideas to do it. But with what Stark just said, that there's no withdrawal limits and linking it just to your guild officers, I'd always say less access is better. So I looked this up. I Googled this when I started ESO and really formed the guild. I looked up how do other guild leaders do it, and it got me to some Reddit posts where people were discussing this back and forth. And their rule of thumb was really you might want to have it so it is just the guild officer. You know, if you still aren't super close, or I'm sorry, what did I say? Just the guild leader. That you don't even have all of your officers have access if you don't know them that well. And that's how I've done it. We have two different tiers of officers in it. So that way, and it's not that I don't trust somebody. It's not like a personal offense sort of deal. It's just I only really want myself and one or two other people to have access, not, you know, 5 to 10 other officers that are mainly there dealing with, are people being polite in chat? Are they, you know, is someone bullying or anything like that? I want it small because you'll hear horror stories, since there's no withdrawal limit, that someone will log in and find, bam, that guild bank was wiped out overnight because somebody had a moment or something like that, you know, and they just walked away with all the loot. And man, that could be a lot of money. That could be 500 items worth of, whew.
Yeah. And it's absolutely like, this is what we're discussing here is absolutely dependent on the players you're interacting with. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of really good people in this game, mm-hmm. but it's a cross section of people. And there are people who don't quite measure up sometimes. So yeah, you do want to come into this with a certain level of care and caution, especially if you're the one running a guild. Another thing that sort of relates to this, and this is in your comment too, you know, restricting access just to guild management, you know, whether that's you and a couple of inner circle officers, or even in a larger guild, that can sometimes expand out to a dozen or more people. Yeah. Because when you've got 500 people in the guild, you do kind of need somebody to be on at all times.
Yeah.
But one thing to do is if you've got a guild member who is going to be AFK, an officer who's going to be AFK for an extended period of time, or they've left the game, you can always demote them. And I really would encourage you to, because I've been bitten before by having a guild officer who left the game just straight up. They were out and they came back. This was before ESO, actually. It was another MMO. They came back, except they didn't. They actually gave their account to somebody else who wandered in and cleared out the guild in that game. So, yeah, you can always, if they come back and it's them, it's really them, you can always reinstate them and bring them back up. Wow. It's not a statement against them, but if they're not there, you probably don't want the account to have that access either.
Like Stark said, yeah, I this game is filled with great people, and I have a quick one that's exactly related to how good people are. But I was at work, I saw one of my guild officers who did have access to the guild bank. He was a great guy, but I saw him leave our Discord while I was at work. And I went, oh no, please don't tell me. Now, there was really very little in our guild bank anyway, but I was like, please don't tell me. I go home and the guild bank is wiped out. So I get back, I log into my computer almost as soon as I get home from work. Again, the guy's gone from Discord. He's gone from the guild. And I go over to the guild bank, and it luckily was still intact. He hadn't touched anything. We still don't know what happened to the guy. You know, again, super nice person, but just wiped himself clean. Account not found sort of stuff. Like, I don't know what he did, but he vanished from the face of the earth. And we got really lucky that he wasn't someone that was like, I'm just pissed you said something I didn't like, Kyle, and I'm wacha, just taking all your stuff and leaving. So there are really good people, like Stark said. I want that to be clear. But there, you won't get hurt if you're a little cautious. A little caution goes a long way.
Well, on the other side of this, this isn't even specifically ESO advice, but just in general, when you're managing guild banks and even guilds in general, is don't get too attached to the stuff that's in the bank.
Good point.
It's not... Somebody's going to come along and take it if it's used. Like, it's, if you're just hoarding it there, then that serves no purpose. But if the purpose is somebody's going to come along and take it and use it, then that's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing you really need to worry about is, were they abusing the access to this? Because we had a guild, actually I still have the guild, but where we had somebody that came in and they pulled a bunch of stuff out of the guild bank, a bunch of items out from the guild bank for deconstruction, which... I've actually heard this story for two different times. One time that I went through, and also from another guild. And in both cases, it was somebody who made an honest mistake. They looked at that stuff. They said, oh, I need to decon all of this stuff to level up the skill line. And it's like, no, these were actual drop set items that are actually kind of difficult to replace. But yeah. So it is this sort of thing where it's like, it's there to be used. And if somebody's abusing it and taking a lot of stuff out, then that's something you talk to them about, or in the most extreme cases, you remove them for, or remove their access to the bank over. But in general, just remember this stuff is going to be gone sooner or later. It's not like it's an extension of your personal inventory.
And so if you're a new player listening to this show saying, well, I'm not going to make a guild, so how does this apply to me? Read our comments as if their advice as to how to glean some how to interact out of it. So, for example, from this, and from what Stark just said, I got the vibe that communication is key. That if you are uncertain about if something in the bank can be taken out, if it's going to kind of reflect poorly, you know, I really need those things in there. Is that okay? Asking officers in the guild in advance, saying, hey, I really want to take that out for this, will be so much better, because now you've got a conscience that you don't have to worry about it. You know, no one's going to look at you and say, ah, you stole all of our stuff that wasn't for that purpose. We were hoarding it. And also see if your guild has any roles for it. Because I know for ours right now, because we don't have... The guild bank doesn't really fit into my vision of our guild. It's just, it's this thing that's a little tedious to manage, but some people want to donate to it. So ours is a pure donation one. Then anything you put in our guild bank right now will be used for the betterment of a guild as a whole. So if you put in things that you don't need, they might be raffled off at later times. They might be sold for something so that we can put money into the guild bank to buy other things. That's our motto, and it works for us. We also have some, we just did a cleaning period where we opened the guild bank to anyone and said, take whatever you want. It's open for the next 6 hours. You can take anything and everything that's in there. So I got that communication is key. Chat, see what's good with your people. So moving away from guild banks for a second, because I feel like I could talk about that for a year. I feel like I could.
But well, there's a lot of experience and background there, too, because this is something that a lot of MMOs, you'll run across this concept and then have to go on with it.
All I want, Stark, is different levels to have different permissions. I want to have a role where new players, I'm back on guild banks, but I want to have something where like players that are just joining the guild can have access to basic items so that they can take out like food and stuff that would be efficient for new players and things of that nature, but maybe not that ultra expensive end game thing that, you know, player who's just been in ESO for 3 days doesn't need their hands on yet. I don't know. We can all wish, right?
Yeah.
Gil tabards. This is something I don't find very useful, and I would like be interested to see if you can change my mind on this, Stark, if you see these active a lot. But again, at 10 members to the guild unlocks the ability to create guild tabards. So these are a cosmetic item. It's an icon or an emblem symbol that goes on your character's chest. They wear it. You've probably seen tabards throughout other games. I know World of Warcraft has these in bulk. But it's just an icon, basically, that identifies you as a guild member. The guild leader can change the coloring and the icon itself, something that signifies the guild. And then players can actually go... You go to a banker in a city, and you choose the guild store option. So you got bank, guild store. Choose guild store, and you should be able to buy a tabard from there. As a cosmetic item, Stark, do you see people using these a lot?
Some. It's useful for saying, oh, hey, I'm a member of this guild. And you sometimes see it with guilds when they're doing group events, you know, mm-hmm. guild get-togethers, where it's like, okay, well, they're going to put the tabards on so they can, you know, demonstrate esprit de corps. It's definitely an option. It's definitely a thing that's there if you want it. If you don't want it, it's still just a cosmetic modification for your character. I do see them. I don't see a lot of them, but some people certainly want to sort of fly the colors. That's there.
I would... Oh, this goes into a while. I should need to save this one for another day. So they don't show through costumes, though.
No, they don't. Except they do if you turn nameplates on. Also, I think if you look at their nameplate at the top of your HUD when you look at somebody, if they've got the... So that's the one thing this does, aside from visual. It will add the guild name to your nameplate.
So if you're wearing a tabard?
Mm-hmm.
What?
So if you're wearing the tabard and wearing a costume over it and somebody looks at you, they can say, oh, hey, you're in that guild.
Guys, this is why I come to the show. This is why I show up every Sunday. Look, I'm being taught things. I actually heard this mentioned somewhere recently, but it was in passing and I didn't pay that much attention to it. That's so good to know, Stark.
Yeah. So this can be a thing where you want to identify yourself as a member of a guild and put that out there in front of people. There isn't a lot of intrinsic need to do so because of the way the guild structure works in ESO. There's not a lot of situations where it's like, oh, hey, I need to tell everyone that I'm a member of this guild or a member of that guild. But if you want to, that option is actually there.
Okay, because I can't keep my opinions to myself, I'm going to go ahead and say, more than this, more than guild tabards, and I understand why they exist, and I understand what I'm about to ask for adds like 10 new layers of things that they just don't want to deal with, and it is not worth their time. But instead of guild tabards, I would rather have banners that could be added to homes. And we'll talk about this later. And I don't know what you would exactly do. I don't know if it would be like a quick UI thing that lets you just like the person that owns the house, they could click it and like cycle through the looks. But that to me would be a lot cooler because I would like to deck out my houses and be like, yeah, represent, instead of my character who, to be honest, I don't pay that much attention to the looks of other characters in the game. That's a me thing. That's a Kyle thing. But I'm often like looking at the objective and I see my friends in my peripheries, but I don't like maybe like once or twice a week do I ever like look at them as a character. Like, okay, got in person with me. Good. So if they have a tabard, I wouldn't notice.
Yeah, it'd be kind of neat to be able to put your guild heraldry up on the walls. Yeah.
That would be real personalization, in my opinion. That would be like, that is something that they would have me dropping. Oh, God, you get me to drop crowns on that. Shh. I didn't say that. I didn't say that, Sauce. No. Okay.
Too late now. Oh, they know. Damn it. But yeah.
Okay. There goes my wallet again. So moving on from guild tabards, the one that we just mentioned in passing to get to purchase your tabard is the guild store. And this one requires a little bit more work. This one unlocks at 50 members into the guild. So again, guild bank and tabard are 10. And 10 people can be fairly easy to get in there. 50 is the next hurdle and kind of the final one in terms of unlocking things to the guild. So 50 people, you unlock your guild store. This allows you to list items for sale to other guild members or to buy from your other guild members. And this is something I didn't know about for the longest time. Because, Stark, would you mind taking a second to explain the idea of traders? Or do you want to save that until we talk about trading guilds?
Well, we can talk about the history a little bit. Because when ESO was designed, it was specifically designed to avoid a central auction house system. Mm-hmm. It was designed with the intention of having a splintered economy where you couldn't just go to one place and then start controlling the market by flipping stuff if you had enough resources to start. So one of the way they solved that, or attempted to solve that originally, was that each guild operates its own independent economy that's only accessible to other guild members. So the guild store, you can list 30 items for sale, and you can set the price at whatever you want. You pay a listing fee, which is, I believe, 4%. I'd need to look to actually be certain of the number. But you pay a listing fee to put it up for sale, and then if it sells, you get the vast majority of that. The guild gets a cut, and a small amount of it just gets eaten. But most of the money will come to you. And this also does help out the guild, because the guild will get a chunk of any sale you make. And that goes into the guild bank and the gold there. Unsurprisingly, people were a little unenthused that they didn't have an option to sell to everybody. And the middle ground there was the creation of the guild trader kiosk, which are fixed locations scattered through the world that you can go to. And once per week, you can bid on these things. Well, actually, I should phrase it this way. You can bid on these things, and then once per week, the bids will be tallied, and the guild that bid the most on that trader will get that location for the next week. In fact, the turnover happens in about 3 hours from when we're recording this.
So what's that make that? 3, so 6 p.m. Mountain, so that makes it 8 p.m. 5 Eastern? Pacific,
yeah, 8 Eastern. Yep. It's either 8 or 9 Eastern, yeah. So this system, once you actually have a guild trader unlocked, what happens is no one else can list there, just members of the guild, but anyone who walks up to that trader can buy from it. So we'll come back to guild traders in a minute as part of a guild as a guild type. But in the short term, yeah, here's this system. And it's worth knowing that even if your guild doesn't have a trader location, you can still list stuff for sale and other members of your guild can buy from you.
Now, see, that is something that's very, that's something I feel like somehow should be used a little bit more just in almost any guild. And maybe I'm the only person that doesn't know about this or didn't know about this. But like, it's not as obvious as seeing other guild traders, because you do have to, you know, go up to a banker in a city. And I don't, my brain doesn't equate, oh yeah, my banker is also my personal guild trader, not my internal facing guild trader, not my external. And so I don't know, I feel like it could be used more. I know some people in our guild are using it, and I need to go in there and look at it and see, like, what are people actually selling? What is something that does any of this stuff move, or is it stagnant? Should I be promoting it more as the guild leader?
As the guild leader, you can track all of that. If you go to your guild page,
oh, you're right,
in the UI, and you go to history, you can actually track sales.
Yeah, guys, this is just a coaching podcast now. Stark basically coaches me for an hour every week on how to press the G key and look into my UI. Well, you're right. It is down there. That is the one tab I never use. So maybe I'll start using that a little bit more and looking in there to see what's going on.
I think you're right, though. This is a system that a lot of people forget about, especially because the guild traders are very easy to access. And aside from when the traders turn over and some of the guilds shuffle around, it's a reliable way to say, oh, hey, I saw a thing over there. I want to buy that. I'm going to go find it over there. As opposed to you can walk up to a banker, any of the normal bankers. The Tithys does not actually count. You know, your banker follower doesn't allow access to this. But you can walk up to any banker in the game and then talk to them and get access to your guild store and then go through the stores for your various guilds, assuming they're large enough to have that unlocked. If they're not, you'll still have the option to bring it up, but the only thing you can buy is going to be the tabard.
And I think what you said it right there, but I want to emphasize. So the advantage of selling internally is that you can access that from any city. Now, you know, porting between way shrines is free, but still, it does, I guess, technically save you some load screens to be like, oh, I'm in Daggerfall, I can just go up to any, you know, this banker here that's in town, and I can check there, and I can still be accessing my guild bank, or my guild, I'm sorry, my guild store, versus like, oh yeah, I gotta go find that one trader that's in Mournhold or something like that, and then traveling over there. I think it's a forgotten sort of thing a lot of the time. Are you in any guilds that use this aggressively, selling within?
I used to be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of want to add that to my mental list of like things to promote a little bit more and just remind people, because I forget on a daily basis that it even exists. And every once in a while, I'm like, oh, look, someone's selling something. So,
yeah, also can be nice because sometimes you can find stuff in there that you would not find in the open world, in the open markets, simply because either the item is in high demand or the item is obscure enough that most people who know what they're doing wouldn't bother listing it to begin with.
Oh, geez. Oh,
yeah.
Also, always watch your prices when you're listing something.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone yesterday in our guild snagged one of those Sigic clocks. Those really, like, they go for like 96,000. They grabbed it for 9,600 because the person missed a zero. So always watch your zeros, people.
Yeah, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, the Daedric motif, like, I think it's motif 14. So it's really cheap now. This won't sound like nearly as much of a coup. But back then it was running around 20K and had a guildie that found one for 200 gold.
Ooh, two zeros.
Yep.
Damn that sticky key on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Well, there's our tip on selling things. Make sure you actually list it for the right amount. Double check. Okay, you want to move on to the idea that this is a good idea, Stark. I like this idea. If you don't know, guilds are other players. They are people. I'll let you read some of this stuff since this is some really good wording from your part. But reminder that guilds are people. What do you think, Stark?
Yeah. So this is kind of true of MMOs in general. In a lot of cases, the content is the other players, not just the obvious content of, oh, here's a quest to run. And guilds really bring that to the forefront, especially in ESO, where you're going to be interacting with other people and you're not going to be working through a set, rigid structure of systems. It's you're dealing with social interaction with other people. So there's no uniform rules to a lot of these services. Like, we just described how they work on a systemic side, but we've also started digging into some of the ways that this can vary from guild to guild. For example, the way the guild bank is set up can operate off vastly different systems. You can have people running guilds in guild banks where they really don't care what goes in or comes out, and everybody can grab whatever they want. And you can have ones that are very tightly, rigidly structured where you have to go to an officer and request it and pay for it, and then you get the item. So it's really important to understand that all of the stuff we just listed also ends up in the factors of you're dealing with people and the rules may be different because you might have an extra social layer attached over this. Also important to remember the rules that are attached, because guilds will have their own quirks and their own social structure that you are trying to sign on to and agree with. And it's important to understand what those are and keep those in mind.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say my tip to someone looking to form a guild, and this is one of the first things I did when I saw that people were actually interested in ours, was I just took 10 minutes after a Twitch stream, and that's all it really took was 10 minutes to just write down in like large bullet points, okay, what are our rules for this thing? What are our rules for that thing? And just put them up online. That way, no one was shocked, stunned, whatever, if we have to make a decision. And as a guild leader, you'll have to make uncomfortable decisions. That's just the nature of leadership. But that way you've got your values, your core values already written down. You know, when you're not in a tense situation, when you have time to think, how are you going to handle something when this weird thing happens? And it's just good to have that. Codified law is a great thing. So take advantage of it. Take that 10 minutes to write it down and share that with your guild officers so they know what you're looking out for. Like, that is something as a streamer and as a guild person in ESO that I've tried to be really up on. That's where I'm trying to grow my maturity level, is to say, here are our values and I want people to know them. And when people know your values, then they can associate with you better. They understand where what's good and what's bad, how to interact. And if you get people, you're basically growing other role models by doing that. Sorry, I'm getting really, really deep.
No, that's cool.
But I think that's really the key between like a good guild versus one that can quickly dive into toxicity, which I think is what we're going to talk about here in a minute, which is guilds that die, dead guilds.
Well, it's not just going to be toxicity for that. Guilds can die for any number of reasons. If enough members of the core group that makes up the guild leave the game for whatever reason, then you can end up with a dead guild that way pretty quickly. especially if nobody's willing to step in and take over. So it's not just a function of toxicity, though that can certainly lead to a dead guild.
You're right. I did not mean to equate those directly.
Yeah.
Very right. So I've been in some of these dead guilds, especially as a newer player. You might, depending on what communities you run in, you might get invites to guilds. I think a big one is people that are creating guilds and don't know what direction to take them in. And so it might be a guild with a leader and four other people. And you might find yourself invited to this, and that leader might be a friend of yours. And it presents an awkward situation that I've personally been PM'd about stuff like this. And I've seen people share it in our chat publicly, where it's like, oh, I'm in a guild and no one logs in anymore, but I don't want to be disloyal to the guild leader. What do I do? I mean, obviously, this is a personal sort of thing. You know, you've got to handle this to your own core values. But it is something that you might need to start navigating, or you might be presented with this. Like I said, I was presented with this situation, and ultimately I had to leave the guild because there was nothing happening. It became a stagnant, dead guild that was taking up one of my five precious guild slots.
Yeah.
So have you been in that situation, Stark, and how did you go about that?
Years ago. And this is a little bit of a danger of a dead guild. Years ago in your guild war situation like that, where it was the guild was supposed to be personal friend, and I was basically the only one that was still playing 3 weeks three months after launch. And because of the way guild wars worked, it was really not playing without a guild was not satisfactory. So yeah, in that case, I ended up leaving. So there's certainly a reason to, when you're looking at something like this and deciding, oh, hey, this is not going to work, this guild is dead. Even with ESO, where you've got the five limit, it's something where you probably want to prioritize dropping it. Mm-hmm. Just to take the Band-Aid off sooner or later. If your friends come back, then they can find you where you're hiding now.
I want to emphasize something here, and this is a personal thing. This is just my opinion. But I would love to emphasize the idea of politely leaving a guild, especially if you are another sane member out there in the community, that you're leaving it for a good reason, like we just said. You know, the guild's not active. Or maybe you disagree with a core tenet of what the guild is doing. And if you get to that point that you feel like you need to leave a guild, and this is totally an optional thing, but it's something I encourage as a good community member, to privately write that guild leader. Send them either a whisper in-game, or more guaranteed to get to them is if you take a minute to send them some in-game mail. If you're in a Discord server with them, a private message would work too. I'd recommend in-game mail or Discord private message personally. But send them something and just say, hey, here's the reasons why I'm leaving. And that can make a big difference to that guild leader's life. First of all, if you're seeing, and I know, again, we're not directly relating toxicity here, but if you see that people in the guild are getting away with murder, for lack of a better word, and that's really bothering you at your core. You don't like how people are being treated in chat. Telling that guild leader brings it to their attention. Sure, as a guild leader, they should be trying to be a good leader and listening to the community and hearing these things and feeling the vibes before it needs to be said. But sometimes you just miss it, especially if it's chat that's going on when you're offline. You know, I can't monitor. Now, I have officers on when I'm not online, but I am not there. And so if a community member tells me, hey, Kyle, this is going on when you're not online, that would make all the difference to me, because now I know and now I can look at it instead of, hey, so-and-so just left in the dead of the night. And that, you just don't know how to handle it as a guild leader. Is it something you did wrong? Is it something that maybe they wanted to join a different guild? Maybe they need more trading guilds in their life so they can make some money.
So granted, this is coming from the perspective of a guild leader rather than somebody who's joining a guild. But in some cases, and I've had to deal with this a fair amount, it's important to be able to just step back and say, okay, they decided to leave.
Yes.
Even when you don't get an explanation for why. Now, this is, like, granted, there's a slight difference in guild leadership experience between the two of us, because you're running a small, fairly social one, and I'm running a trade guild. Mm-hmm. So when I'm looking at people leaving, it's a lot of times it's like, I'm going to look at the overall numbers and just decide, you know, how many people chose to leave over this time frame, rather than going, oh, hey, we lost one person, and then agonize over that. Because the other part of this as a guild leader is to understand that sometimes people simply don't, they find something better. They find something they'd rather be doing. They want to do something else with that slot. And it's not necessarily a condemnation of you as a leader or guild. It's just they wanted to be somewhere else.
That is fantastic advice, Stark. You are very right. You are very right on multiple levels there. That you're right. First of all, people come and go, period. It's the internet. There's very little, I don't want to say there's very little loyalty, but I mean, there can be between certain people. You know, you will have people that come by and it's just like, oh, I'm really into this for a minute. Okay, I'm not into that. Very true. You're right. And I think saying that your guild is more of a business transaction and just like an office space, people come, they take their job. Whenever it doesn't suit them anymore, they move on to the next job. And then you're right that there are social guilds that are more like, hey, I like you. You like me. Let's hang out. Oh, no, they left. Did that mean that they don't like me? And I think you're right. A healthy amount of, man, it's that balance, though, I think is key.
It is.
It's knowing when to say, okay, well, they left, but also being like, man, I hope, did we do something? But also, God, that's some deep personal development there in just terms of life.
Yeah.
I'm sure every Twitch streamer that's listening to this podcast, this is your everyday. This is your everyday on Twitch. So with all that being said, a good tip, and this is kind of a separate topic, but related, avoiding drama in guilds throughout. And in ESO, I've seen very little drama in guilds, but in other games, World of Warcraft, I have seen, I have been involved with as a teenager. I may have gotten booted out of a guild once because I said something that they took way more seriously than it was intended. And I was booted in the dead of night. My response to that was not the nicest thing, and boy have I learned my lesson in life of just things. Drama is real. Drama in guilds can happen, and it is,
it's almost inescapable.
I think you're
right. You've collected a group of 150 or 200 or 500 people from all over the planet, mm-hmm, that have nothing in common except this: something's going to go wrong.
Yeah. And that leads to the question of how does a guild leader handle drama? How do officers choose to handle drama? And how do you, as either someone that's in the drama or as a bystander, how do you handle that drama? And again, it's all opinion because it's, you know, we can't tell you how to dictate your life. But I would say that there is something to always taking the high ground. I would say that diving headfirst into it and slinging insults is probably the worst.
Oh yeah, no.
Option. That's probably that's clearly the wrong way to handle it.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it's like at a ground level as a guild member, try to keep communication with people, try to be respectful of people around you, try to avoid, like, if you realize something's getting on somebody else's nerves, try to avoid setting them off unnecessarily. But at the same time, you're not going to be able to fully avoid this all the time. Making sure you've got clean lines of communication with your guild leadership is also important. And this goes to both sides of this, the guild leader and at the ground level, is making got clean lines of communication between members and leadership. Because if something starts to come up and there's a real grievance here, then it's something that they're going to need to deal with sooner or later.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. Mine's tertiary to this.
Okay, as I was going to say, at a leadership level, a lot of the time, drama, you need to either adjudicate the dispute, mm-hmm, so find out what's going on, and like you said, you need to keep yourself out of it as much as possible and avoid becoming a participant, but also be ready to drop the hammer on people for what they've done, if it's warranted. Because what I've realized over the years in multiple guilds across multiple MMOs is that if you do not deal with it decisively, and that doesn't mean, you know, go out and execute everyone involved, but if you don't deal with it decisively when it comes up, it will fester and it will get worse. So it's really important to make sure that, to the best of your ability, everybody's position is respected, but also that if there's a problem, if there's somebody that's actually stepping out of line from the community, that is dealt with, either they're spoken to, or that if they've been spoken to, if they've been talked to about this and they refuse to deal with what's going on, or they continue to behave in the way they did, that you remove them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it will get worse, unfortunately. And I've seen this too many times over the years.
And so what I was going to say, because I feel like we need a light moment for half a second here, and say, we are talking about so many base, but yet extremely important, both opinion questions and system questions, like you defined earlier, the difference there. And doing so, we have to give you the bad so that you can enjoy the good. And I want it to be known that there is so much good that can come from a guild. But so I want that to be known, that there I log in and every day my guild makes me happy. It is very rare that there's something that hits me and I'm like, oh, more. And I think it's an exponential growth sort of thing. The more good you bring into the guild, the more good you encourage, those values that you put out there, I think those propagate and become their own thing, and they become, your people will start to carry that banner for you. And I'm amazed and blown away by that every single day. That being said, you do get the harder decisions at the start, and it's how you react to those hard decisions. Do I keep Joe Blow, who's kind of an ass, or do I get rid of Joe Blow to promote positivity and, you know, make sure that everyone's happier? I log in every day and I'm a happy man.
Yeah, and when you've got guild members at loggerheads where they're actively picking at each other, or where you've got somebody that is actively being harsh to someone. I was trying to say this as politely as I can, which might sound, make it sound like overly sensitive, but they're out of line, or they're using terms you're not comfortable with in chat. Got a few in mind that I've run across lately. This is stuff where it's like, you just have to put down the law and say, look, we're not going to support this. We're not going to let you do this to the guild. And unfortunately, this is going to come back to the transaction thing you mentioned earlier, but there is a real point when you're looking at a large guild and you're realizing you've got one or two people that are being a problem, and then you've got 498 other people who are about to have their day ruined by some jackass.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, at that point, you kind of do need to put the hammer down. And because of the social dynamic with guilds, it can really suck, because in some cases, these are your friends. But yeah, it's important to keep that, keep the role with leadership separate from that, at least at some level personally. And as somebody that pointed out to me recently, if you've got a friend who is only using your friendship to allow them to skirt the rules, they're not really your friend.
Great advice throughout all of life. That's a good one. Man, it's such a deep topic, and it's a topic that I love, and maybe I've been blessed without knowing it, in that, you know, I streamed on Twitch for a year before ever starting this guild. And as we talk about this, the similarities between the two, how you manage your chat on Twitch, who's an officer or a moderator there, how do you educate them on your values, how do you do this, that, and the other, they are identical. I mean, do you let someone skirt the rules because they're a friend? My opinion is no. You know, you don't want, if someone walks into your Twitch chat and they see that your moderator is having a really bad, like, negative attitude, that is the wrong message. Now you're saying it's like, it's great to be negative. That's what we do here. And man, I guess the tip that I want to give for future guild leaders, and this is again something throughout all life, whether you go into business or anything like this, be selective about who you take on board for anything. You know, if you don't like what someone's telling you, if you don't like, well, that's maybe the too vague of a way to say that, but if you're bringing people into your community, don't just bring people in for numbers. That's what I want to say. Don't just, you know, oh man, we need 50 people so we can get that guild trader. Don't let them stay in there if in your guild chat they're saying some nasty stuff, like Stark said, they're using words that you don't agree with. No, not just for the number. Wait the extra week, you know, work to find the quality people. Find the diamonds in the rough. Don't just take all the rough so you can say that you're at 50 people. It's not worth it. You actually lose good people because, like Stark said, absolutely, you don't want the two people ruining the days of the other 498 people. That is bad, bad, bad. I hope I said that in a way that made some semblance of sense. Or I could go with my first answer, Stark. Don't listen to what people say when you don't like what you hear. And they all shut us off.
Yep.
My God, you were worried. Stark was worried. rightfully so, that guilds weren't going to be a topic enough of us for us to talk about, and we were at like the 45-minute mark.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's jump into the idea here, and we can always come back to this in more detail, and this might actually go kind of smoothly. But what are the different types of guilds? Do you want to list them briefly, Sark?
Yeah, okay. So in general, we're running with types. In some ways, these are almost more like keywords, because you'll see guilds throw out multiple ones. And with a few exceptions, these tend to be fairly fluid. I'll point those out as we get there. You've got newbie-friendly guilds. These are guilds that are just looking for new players, or they've got a lot of new players already and are looking for experienced players. They're usually happy with either, because if you've got new players, you need experienced players that actually understand how the game works to work as mentors. And if you've got a lot of people who are experienced and they want to be teaching new players, then they're going to need new players. So the newbie friendly thing, like, this almost exists as a tag that gets attached to other guilds, other roles, but it is kind of its own thing. We have social guilds, which is what Kyle runs, where you're primarily just there to hang out with friends. You'll run some content. You'll do some things with them. Usually pretty laid back, but there's a wide variety of stuff here. And there's actually a couple of weird little subgenres of social guilds that you might almost consider their own thing. But yeah, so you've got guilds that actually focus on housing. You've got guilds that focus on role playing, which is you go into the game and you kind of look at the game as an online chat room instead of as a normal game, and you're role-playing with other players. Not my thing personally, but certainly know a lot of people who have gone that route, and it's certainly one thing where the players really are the content, because you're there to interact with your friends and tell the stories you want, as opposed to just running content the way you normally think of with an MMO. Another one are vampire and werewolf guilds, and you can see where this could overlap with a lot of other things. Vampire and werewolf guilds, it can be both. It can be one or the other. Usually focus on getting players that want to be infected in and infecting them, and then also helping to provide for players who are looking for this as their playstyle. This can be a role-playing guild also. You've got some, I've actually seen a lot of vampire RP guilds that are a little bit excessive.
Ooh.
But they have fun. They have fun. So
how many of those werewolf guilds are all about that new Hersey Hunter's Glade place? How many guild halls just became that this weekend?
Oh man, that has been a request in the RP community for 4 years. No kidding. The option to have a way to toggle werewolf on and keep it. Yeah, they've been asking for that for a while. Okay, so this is the one that I'm actually most familiar with, but trading guilds. These are the ones that act a little bit more uniquely here. Mm-hmm. You will find trade guilds that are newbie friendly. You will find trade guilds that have social elements. In fact, the one that we're both in is sort of on the edge between trading and social, because there's a lot of social elements that float through. But a couple of things about trading guilds. Most of these will have a minimum sales requirement, have guild dues, or have an activity requirement, as in you're logging in regularly, simply a member of the guild, but then you logged out. And this is entirely pragmatic, because we mentioned when we were talking about the guild store, the entire concept of these guild kiosks or guild traders that you can go to and you can buy from. Also talked about how you have to bid for them. What we didn't say is those are expensive.
Oh.
Very expensive. Oh. Yeah. And I think Kyle's starting to get the idea there. He's got a little bit of an idea. Your guild is going to have to be making a lot of money each week through some means in order to keep a trader and keep themselves solvent. So as a result, when you see things like dues or minimum sales requirements, that's actually pragmatic. They're spending that money to make sure you've got a guild trader location for next week. And sometimes you'll see people who get a little bit paranoid about it. They look at it, they're like, but this is a lot of money you're asking for. And straight up, with a guild trader, if you're not making more than you're spending, don't do it. Don't stick with it. If you've got a guild where they're actually asking for dues and you're not seeing an advancement on that, you know, making more money than you're spending, it isn't worth it for you. And there are guilds that are going to be better options. But the price of those kiosks can get pretty astronomical in major trade locations. And the value of those kiosks does relate to how much sales those kiosks will get on a weekly basis. So this creates another interesting thing about trade guilds, which is they're always looking for new people. Because you can't really afford to have dead members, members who are offline or elsewhere. These are pretty hungry for new players to come in and start selling. So there's always a venue to get in and get access to being able to sell things to other players outside of your guild. You'll see them advertised in zone chat pretty frequently. And at that point, it's, you know, find what you're comfortable with. And a lot of trading guilds, if you're not up to snuff yet, will help you out getting up to speed and getting stuff listed. So it's something to keep in mind. It does become a pretty substantial time-consuming playstyle, but it also gives you the option to have a lot of money for use and things in-game.
That's, yeah. I mean, they are kind of the lifeblood of your financial well-being.
Yeah.
And I see, and this is not definitely, this is not across the board, but I think a rule of thumb, you'll often see people that if they are not, if they're more, dare I say, like a solo-y sort of player, if they're someone that doesn't love huge clicks of people just on a daily basis, you'll see those people with maybe 5 trading guilds. Mm-hmm. Or another one I see is 3 trading guilds, 2 social guilds. Or yeah, like a social and a something else, or progression maybe. Which, yeah.
Well, and trade guilds are kind of interesting because it does range the gamut. I've been in trade guilds where there's basically no activity in guild chat whatsoever. There's a kiosk. We're selling a lot on a day-to-day basis, but almost nobody actually interacts with one another. And then you'll see ones where there's actually a fair amount of social interaction on a regular basis. So it's like we said earlier, guilds are individual people. They are the community. And trade guilds range from it's a business to it's a group of friends that are also selling a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Did I blank out, and did we say why you might want to be in multiple trading guilds? And that's that there's a cap to how many items
you can sell. Yeah, you can only sell 30 items through a given guild store at a time. As they sell, those slots open back up. So it's not like you can only sell 30 per day or 30 per week. It's you can only have 30 unsold items at any given time.
Yeah, so 30 listed max. So like some people that are like, I got to sell everything in a... Good God, I don't know how they make that many items per week because I'm a derp. But they, you know, need all 5 guild slots full so they can do 30 items times 5 guilds and, you know.
Yeah. A lot of times when you've got somebody that's doing all 5, part of their day is going to be going around finding things to flip. If something significantly under market, they might buy it up and then resell it at or above market.
I'm feeling like we genuinely need, and I think we can wrap a lot of our topics today, but I feel like we need guilds part 2. Like as a thing, like so many of these topics, like we're glossing over these in a good way. Like these are good summaries, but man, like we could go talk, like we need like an episode to talk just about traders and like how to work around that.
Well, we've got the, okay, we can keep going through these because
why don't we wrap out this week with talking, we'll hold on to guild halls for another day. We want to talk to you guys about that concept. But yeah, why don't you just run through, do you want me to tackle some of the next ones?
Well, you can hit the next one. That should be somewhat familiar.
Oh, this one? Twitch streamer guilds. These are guilds out there that you will find by running into Twitch streamers. Zoss is really good about working with streamers, and therefore, you get these big streamers that have guilds. I could name names, but I feel like you guys know them if you just go to the Twitch channel. They run guilds that are primarily focused on the people that come into their Twitch chat. So you've already got, like I said, or I've been talking about throughout, that those two entities, Twitch and ESO, your values and your community tends to be in line in a large way. So it just makes sense. I was actually not even interested in owning a guild in ESO at first until I had people saying, do you have one? Do you have one? Can I join? And therefore we made one. So these sometimes focus on a single streamer, sometimes as a group of streamers. Ours is in the middle of transitioning, which is very interesting. It is a guild that bears my name or the name of Kyle Dempster Studios, but it's filling up with other Twitch streamers, which I love. And that's making a very, like, we're adapting to that. We might have a rank soon in the guild that denotes, like, these are our streamer friends that you should also go and love and support. So that's a very cool concept. They're ideal if you want to participate more directly. So true. Our guild, for example, self promo plug. we often run the Somerset daily thing. So we'll go around and kill all the world bosses in Somerset to make some cash and get some things that sell well on the market. And that is something that's heavily done through Twitch. So I would say about 90% of the people that join us are people that are in the guild, but they're also hanging out on Twitch at the same time. The other 10% might be people that are just on Twitch with us and they're not actually in the in-game guild. So it's a very cool overlap. And it seems to be, and again, like Stark said earlier, I should call out, I'm a guild leader here, so I'm coming from a guild leader stance. But it seems to be that it's a really good way for people to bond. They chat on Twitch and then they chat in game, and so it's this cool direct contact sort of thing.
Well, as a community building exercise, it also lets your community continue to operate when you're offline, which is something that if you're just running a channel and you don't have a guild, can be somewhat difficult.
Yeah, it really is. I think that's a great point, Stark. If you are a new streamer, new ESO player, something of that sort, I would like to emphasize that joining guilds can be a good way to do some, like, make some friends before you just try and make your own guild from scratch without knowing people. Like I just mentioned, I was asked to make one at some point. It didn't, you know, it wasn't like I just logged in and was like, we need a guild now, because that can be hard. I don't know if we said that at the start, but that can be a little bit hard, not knowing people and trying to find people instead of having a group and then going from there. PvP ones, I'm gonna throw this right back to you because it's not me.
Okay, PvP guilds, they can get interesting. They can get they have a lot of fun with actually doing the large group based content in Cyrodiil and the Imperial City. They'll also run Battlegrounds, but because Battlegrounds are 4v4v4 and because it's all random, it tends to be less of a focus of these guilds. They tend to focus heavily on campaign participation. I don't think we've ever really talked about the Cyrodiil campaigns or how those work, but it is a thing that benefits from being able to get together a lot of players and go at it in a group and coordinated raids. So they're definitely a participant in the community, and they're definitely out there if you're wanting to get into this to find guilds that focus on PvP. And as with everything else, the rules vary. There's actually some pretty extreme ones in some cases, but yeah, that's one to look for if that's what you're looking at. The final one we're looking at here today are progression guilds. So these are primarily focused on running some of the hardest group content in the game. And as with PvP, they'll have varying requirements. Common one with progression guilds is that they'll require a specific amount of DPS before you're allowed to participate in advanced trials. This isn't strictly elitism. There is a certain element where the more DPS the group has, the easier life will be for all of the participants. So it can be elitist if the values are set way above what's necessary, but on paper it's not. Even if it seems like it at first glance, especially because if you haven't gotten into endgame content yet, the numbers will seem slightly excessive. Once you've started getting into vet trials, you'll start to understand why they're for that.
Yeah, it makes sense, actually. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So MMOs are massively multiplayer for a reason. It's in the name. And that should be said. I think a good recap for this is to say that guilds are a great way to get in with other players. It's a great way to meet friends if you don't already have friends playing. But it is a reminder that the ESO is very single player friendly. So though I personally am a huge advocate of guilds, I think Stark is as well, you can do a lot of this content without. It's very much a per player sort of thing. We've stressed that too, that, you know, there's these very systemic sides, but there's also very personal sides. You need to find things that work with you, because at no point should leaving a guild, being in a guild that doesn't share your values, or just not even being able to find a guild right away, none of that do we want. We don't want any of that to hold you back from enjoying ESO. It's such an optional component to the game. It's such a personal component of the game that you just need to take your time, and there's no rush to it. You can join a guild at any point. You can leave a guild at any point. So really find what works for you. And I think, Stark, that we've definitely got, we've opened up so many doors here to talk about so much more content, and I love it. I love guilds. I'm such a social man that I could talk about this for days. Anything else you want to talk about in the various types of guilds?
No, but just one general piece of advice. I mentioned it when we were talking about trading earlier, yeah, but a lot of guilds will advertise in zone chat. So that is a way you can find guilds as you're going around in the game. Some guilds, they're going to be looking for members specifically from related guilds. I think you mentioned that. But in this case, if you're just starting out, one thing to keep an eye on is Zone Chat and look for people that are advertising, looking for members for their guilds.
Yeah.
If it's not a good fit, you can always leave it later, but that will get you your first in towards social connections if that's what you're after.
Yeah, I love it. Now, Stark, I'm going to link my guild application page in the description below. Do you have anything you want to pimp out for your guild that you'd like to have there so people could find you? Or
no, it's okay. Like, we've got, if you've got people looking for trade guilds, you know where to find me in game.
There you go.
Actually, if you've got people looking for trade guilds, you can invite them too, I think.
Yes, so. I've invited people to that guild before. So there you go. And we're both on PC North America, for those that don't know. We're over there. So yeah, hit me up. We can get you over to Stark's guild too. This being said, I had something and I lost it already. Oh well, my brain's bad. We'll link the guild, my thing below. You can find that if you're interested in joining. Again, like Stark said, mine's a Twitch guild, a social guild, and it's one that invites new players. So if you're new and looking for people to help guide you through, we got a lot of veteran players that are willing to donate their time and just, hey, people are looking for friends. I mean, in a very genuine way, they just want to hang out with one another. And that's, I think, a wonderful thing, and I am now very, very, very thankful after having said all this aloud. I am very thankful for all the members that are in our guild. I am grateful for their low drama and just how nice and polite they are. Speaking of doing things that are nice for others, segue. On November 3rd, the Elder Scrolls podcast community is in the very early stages of planning an Extra Life event happening on Twitch. So for those that don't know, Extra Life is a great charity organization. And we'll go into this in more detail as this sets out and, you know, whenever it actually solidifies into something, we'll get you more information. But basically, they want to take all of November 3rd to do kind of a 24-hour stream session between different podcasts, and we're working on all of that. But it's something that the Lore Seekers podcast is heading up. You should definitely check them out. They're amazing. Sons of Sithis is going to be in there. The Tales of Tamriel podcast. Oh my god, they shouted us out when we were just starting out. They're great. I love them.
They are.
Lotus of Doom's in there. And then us. So again, very, very rough stages right now. I just got the email this weekend, but I wanted to put it on people's calendars so that you can have that in mind, that is Saturday, November 3rd, starting probably like 12:01 a.m. I don't know if it's Eastern or Pacific yet, but it's going to start at the crack of dawn and then go throughout the day. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a great way to give back to the community. Our guild will be there and mobilized, ready to give some love. Thank you so much to everyone that tunes in every week. You guys, your feedback has been amazing. If you ever want to send something directly to the show, you can use kyledempsterstudios@gmail.com. If you want to join us over on Discord, that is discord.kyledempsterstudios.com. Link to the guild will be below. Pretty simple. We're all at one place. Stark, thank you very much for being here, sharing all of your wonderful knowledge, as always. It was really great to have an episode where we could kind of not be reciting facts so much as sharing opinions, which I love. Next week, we're planning on... Well, next week, so in the notes, everybody, we're going to try and wrap up some guild information, talk about guild halls. We also wanted to talk about basics on buying the game, because ESO does many different sales, many different versions, things like that. But I'm not sure. Next week might be the week we know about the Witches Festival.
Hopefully, yeah.
So
we might be doing a thing on seasonal events.
Yeah, next week's going to be a little up in the air. It's either going to be continuation on Guild and buying the game, or it's going to be about seasonal events, talking about how to do the Witches Festival, things like that. So either way, I'm looking forward to it very much so, because those are going to be cool topics. Thank you very much, Stark. Thank you, everyone that's listening. I will talk to you next week.
Thanks. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.